It's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. I'm sorry to be a poor representative. Next week we'll have Sonia back, our regular speaker captain, to do the job. But for tonight, I get to tell you a little bit about tonight's speaker. So today is 5 days and 3 years since Bryce took a drink last. And I asked him earlier today, I said, hey, so his date is 4/10. I said, what did 4/9 look like? You know, he kind of laughed and he let me know that he had been rescued by some well-meaning 12-steppers. He was afforded the opportunity to detox in one of our local treatment homes here at the Robertson House. And within about a year of that decision to stop drinking, he's been active in sponsoring other men. He's been married for 2 years. Together they have a something of a Brady Bunch. They have 6 kids, 3 boys and 3 girls at home, and I'm sure that's a lot of fun in quarantine. So I'm going to ask you to now please help me to give a warm Tulare County welcome and lots of ASL love, right? So we like to applaud for Bryce, giving our jazz hands, and giving thumbs up and stuff like that. It's a really difficult thing to talk to a computer that doesn't give you any feedback. So please help me to be sure we give Bryce some good feedback as he's sharing his story, his experience drinking up. Bryce, it's all yours, buddy.
Yeah, it is strange to do this Zoom thing. But hey, it's pretty cool that we have this technology and that we can still hold a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and still be connected. When Bill asked me to speak at this meeting, the first 3 times I told him no. And it was mainly because I'm nervous about that podium. I did not want to get up in front of all those people and speak. And you know what? I've been around Alcoholics Anonymous for about, I don't know, 12 years. And in that time, I've shared quite a bit, but I don't, I get real nervous when a bunch of people are staring at me. So even at the local Alano Club, I would never speak at that meeting just because you had to get up at the podium. But anyway, as COVID-19 comes into effect, and now I'm sitting here in my garage, so I guess it all worked out. But the reason I finally agreed to share and overcome that fear, if I would have had to be speaking in front of y'all, was because there's a lot of new people that attend this meeting regularly, and I have a connection to the local treatment centers. I've been through Pine Recovery 3 different times, and as Bill mentioned, did a detox at Robertson House. And so I know that those recovery homes within that organization come to this meeting, and so I felt like it would be a good opportunity for me to share my story and my experience and what's happened because of Alcoholics Anonymous, what's happened to me in my life and just having that background with the treatment centers, I felt like I would have a little more impact to the people that are in treatment right now. And so I hope that there's some newcomers in this meeting. I heard about a 90-day date, but I hope there's some new people here because that's my main focus, and I think that's the main focus of Alcoholics Anonymous is the newcomer. And so I'll talk a little bit about my growing up. I'm from Visalia. I was born and raised here. I had a fairly normal childhood. I was well taken care of. My parents are both hardworking Christians, and they took me to church, and I was exposed to that, so I had somewhat of an understanding of an existence of a creator. And not a whole lot of things bad happened to me. Like I said, I had a pretty good childhood and was raised by some pretty good people that, that instilled some good morals in me. But through doing some step work and kind of reflecting back on my, childhood, there's one thing that I have, figured out that kind of led me to becoming alcoholic. And that was that I have one brother. He's a year older than me. And growing up, it seemed like, at least it was my perspective, that all the bad shit happened to me and that my brother just kind of glided through life. When I was about 7 or 8 years old, I had a whooping cough, and that was like this terrible sickness that affected me. And then, you know, we were involved in sports, not traditional sports, but we raced bicycles. We did BMX racing, and I was definitely more aggressive in that, and ended up breaking my arm when I was in fifth grade, I think. And then we started riding dirt bikes into my adolescent, and when I was 15, I went down on my bike and severely broke my leg and was in the hospital for like 2 weeks and had multiple surgeries on my leg, and it took me a bunch of time to heal. And so one of the things that I, reflecting back, is I felt like I had bad luck, because here was my brother who didn't have these things. He didn't have as many medical problems. He didn't have injuries. He didn't, you know, and so I kind of compared myself to him in that respect, and I felt different. I felt like I was going to have a harder road. And another thing I've recognized is that whenever I was hurting, because of going through those things, there was medicine that would make me feel better, right? Anytime I had a very doting mother, and so anytime I was sick, she was giving me medicine. And then, so I kind of had this idea that there was these chemicals that I could take when I didn't feel good, right? And I didn't feel good very much. And so as I grew into my teenage years, I didn't have any fear of alcohol or drugs or anything. I experimented with all of it. And to be honest, when I found alcohol and drugs, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I remember the first drink I had, and I remember that feeling, that release, and I felt great. I felt like, wow, this is it. I've discovered the meaning of life. When I'm intoxicated, I don't have fear anymore. I don't have worry. I don't feel different. I don't feel worse than. I felt great. And so I ran with that. And for a number of years, it was a great tool. It felt like my life was better because of it. But there was a progression, right? I at first it was just partying on the weekends, and you know, like I said, I got into drugs quite a bit, and I would say the majority of my drinking was not drinking alcohol. I consumed any intoxicant that made me feel good. But then as that progressed, I particularly found one that was like the best, right? If I wasn't a hard drinker and I found whiskey, except for me, I found opiates, pills, and at the beginning, Oxycontin, and that progressed. And that's really where my alcoholism started to affect my life negatively. I was in my early 20s. My girlfriend at the time had become pregnant, and so I was going to be a father. And it just so happened that during that time, I found my alcohol of choice. And my life started to be consumed with staying loaded. It progressed to the point where it was no longer just a party; it was a requirement. I needed to stay loaded. I needed just to get up and go to work. I had to be loaded. And so the progression slowly got worse, and my family started recognizing that there was something wrong, and you know, my finances were bad and all of that. And so they did not like a conventional intervention, because they didn't know anything about alcoholism or dealing with someone like me, but they said, look, you have a problem, I think you need to go to treatment. They knew that there was treatment centers, rehabs that you could go to. And so I think I was about 23, almost 24. My daughter had been born already, and they said, look, you need to go to rehab. And I said, okay. And I was definitely, by that point, I knew that I had a problem with alcohol, right? I knew I had a problem with drugs. There was no denying that, but I wasn't ready mentally to accept that getting loaded wasn't going to be a part of my life anymore. I felt like I could still control it. I felt like I had the ability to control it, and so I did 90 days. I got out. I went right back to work. I think I stayed sober for maybe 4 months before I relapsed. And this went on for about 7 years, in and out of rehab, started getting in trouble with the law, started being incarcerated. Can you hear me now? Okay. So in 2014, I found myself in trouble with the law once again, back in court. And this time I was in some pretty deep shit, and they were going to send me to prison. And they said, you can go to prison or you can do drugs. Okay, sorry, I was getting a phone call. I think that was interrupting me. Anyway, 2014, I was in a shit ton of trouble, and I was looking at prison, or they gave me the opportunity to do an 18-month drug court program. And so I said, give me drug court, because I knew I'd get out of jail. And so they let me out of jail, and I went right back to drinking. I hadn't been in jail very long, and hadn't even detoxed yet, and so I went right back to doing what I was doing. And one thing I did do is show up for the court dates, and I went and signed up for treatment. Just a minute, guys. I'm sorry.
Call.
Never mind. Okay. So drug court. I couldn't stop. So they let me out, but I continued to show up to the court dates, and I started giving them dirty drug tests and just showing up. And so that lasted maybe another month, and they took me back into custody and made me wait for a bed at Pine. And so I was back in custody, and I was tired at that point. I was really beat up. I was at the point where I was drinking against my will. I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to live that lifestyle. I just felt like I was trapped. And so being incarcerated that time really, really saved my life. And, you know, and then, going straight to treatment from jail, was another great thing, you know, and I had been to that, to Pine twice before already. And so I knew everybody. I felt comfortable with the counselors there, and I was hopeful, and I felt good about recovery. So I got a sponsor, which happened to be, somebody that I used to drink with, and we were friends already. And so that felt good. That felt easy. And he was doing, he had 3 or 4 years, sober at the time, and he was involved in recovery. And so I started, my journey in drug court and sobriety. And I really made some good strides, and I completed the drug court program and stayed sober and knew that I had to be involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I was of service to a meeting. I was a secretary. I started, sponsoring a guy and was doing well and got, I think to about 2.5 years sober. And what happened is I was working, I'm in construction, and I was on the job and I got hurt and I had to go to the doctor. And this was a big fear for me from the start, because of my alcohol of choice, right? And I was super nervous about, what was going to happen. But I was engaged to my wife at this time, and I thought, I know what I'm supposed to do. I need to take somebody with me that, and hold me accountable. If they prescribe me any kind of medication, I'll do what I've been taught to do, which is be accountable, let them. So that's what I did. But what I did not do is call my sponsor and tell him, hey, I'm scared. I just got hurt and I'm going to the doctor. I didn't do that. I don't know why I didn't do that. I should have done that looking back on it, but I didn't. And so what happened was is they prescribed me some medication that I shouldn't have been taking. And that took me back into active alcoholism, drinking, and back right where I was, except this time I had been sober long enough and learned a little bit about recovery that this time it was hell. It was hell from the start. And it took me 4 months to get sobered up again. And it was terrible. Every day waking up, not wanting to drink, but feeling like I had to. And in those 4 months, I was actively trying to stop. I went out of town to a place, for a couple weeks and ended up leaving there. I was struggling, but I was reaching out at the same time. And so finally what happened is I got back into a detox at Pine. And again, I've had a long standing relationship with people that work there. And so they were concerned and, you know, helpful. And what happened is I was at Pine and, And I left. I couldn't detox it. I knew I could get a drink about two blocks away, and so that's what I did. I left, and I went and got loaded one more time, and then I didn't know what to do. I was engaged to be married. I had a small business already. I had gained so much back in my life, and I was loaded again, and it was just baffling. It was completely baffling. I was pissed off at God. I was pissed off at Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought, you know, I did what you fuckers told me to do, and I'm back here again, you know? And anyway, so I walked back to Pine and loaded. And just sat there on the front steps, and they came out and said, "What happened? Did you leave?" I said, "Yeah, I left." And so, what do you want to do? I don't know. I didn't know what to do. I was miserable. I was miserable loaded. It was just miserable. And by the grace of God, the director there at Pine, who I'll be forever grateful to, said, "Look, I'm gonna take you over to our new facility, and I'm gonna let you stay there as long as you need to stay there." And so I said, "Okay," because I didn't know what else to do, and I made it over there, and now the place I would get my alcohol was too far to walk to get. So I was kind of stuck, and that allowed me to detox and start to get a clear head again. And so while I was in detox there, I wasn't really in the program, and I was kind of like this extended detox. They just let me stay there for free. And so a guy that I had met a few times in Alcoholics Anonymous showed up there, and he asked if he could take me to a meeting, and they agreed, and he'd been sober for probably about 10 years at that time, and so they agreed, and he took me to a meeting. He said, "Well, I'm going to take you to this meeting, and you can get a sponsor." And I had heard about this particular meeting for a long time, because I had been in and out of the rooms for so long. And I used to think that it was some sort of cult, because they were kind of preachy about their message, and there was kind of this sense that they were doing something different than the rest of us in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so for a long time, I was like, "I don't know, you know, do you really have to do all of that?" You know, they're talking about going through the book line by line. I don't know. For a long time, I thought they were just arrogant. You know, they thought they figured it out. Anyway, at that point in my life, I was so miserable, and you know, I had had this couple years of sobriety and done so well that I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go to this meeting, I'm gonna get a sponsor, and I'm gonna do whatever he tells me to do. I'm gonna do the steps like it's my lifeline, and I'm gonna just take it one day at a time and do what this gentleman tells me to do. And so that's what I did. I went to that meeting. I got a sponsor that very night. I didn't know the guy. I'd seen him around at meetings, but I had no prior relationship with him. And I just said, "Will you be my sponsor?" And he said, "Yeah, absolutely." And so I started on that step work. And here's where I'm going to preach the book to you now a little bit. But in the foreword to the first edition, the second sentence in that first paragraph is talking about the book, and it says, "To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book." And so my sponsor told me, you know, that this is a textbook. This is something to be studied, and it's going to show you precisely how to recover. And by doing that process, starting that process with him, I learned more than I ever had before. Because in those other short times of sobriety, I had sponsors, but they didn't read the book with me. They kind of just made up, it seemed like they just made up these things to do. You know, step one, admit that you're powerless, and, you know, what's the definition of powerless and unmanageability? And I would write something down, and then, okay, we're done with step one. Well, by reading this book and sitting across with another a recovered alcoholic, I found out about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's in our book, and they are, it is precise directions on how to recover. And so I started learning, you know, and, you know, there's 103 pages in our book where the steps are from step one to step 12. It's 103 pages. Well, 52 of those pages are on step one. So that told me how important step one was, right? And again, like I said, I knew for a long time that I had a problem with alcohol. What I didn't know is about alcoholism, what it means to be an alcoholic. And I got to learn that, and I got to admit to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. I got to understand what it means, what this disease is, and started learning how to treat it. And my life has gotten good, you know, because of that. I don't know how much time I have left. But I can't say enough about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, step work. If you're new, get a sponsor that's active, that reads the book with you. You know, there's something magical that happens when one alcoholic sits down in front of another and takes them through this work. You know, God has, I'm going to read one. I think I have time. Okay. Bill says I have 10 minutes. I'm going to read a portion from, starts on page 84. And this is right after your 10th step. And it's kind of a promise, and it's what I'm experiencing today. And it says, "And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. And we will find that this has happened. We will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us." And that's what's come true in my life. And of course there's maintenance involved in that. It says right after that paragraph that we have a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. And so I have to be active. There's things that I have to do, to remain in that place of neutrality. But man, I'm telling you, I was a hope to die heroin addict, and today I'm neutral. I don't fear it. I don't avoid it. My wife's a social drinker. We have alcohol in our home. it doesn't affect me. And that's a miracle, because that's what I lived for. I absolutely loved being intoxicated, loved what it did for me. And today, it's just not there. It doesn't come to mind. And I can't explain exactly when that took place or how that happened, except that I got a sponsor. I started reading the book with him, and we went through this process, and God removed it. It's just gone. It's no longer an issue. So for those that are new, there's hope. We do recover. Life does get better. It's hard. You have to put in the work. You know, when I got here, I was a convicted felon, still am, had no car, had no job, had no driver's license. I rode a bike to meetings and groups for 20 months until I got my license back. And then I got a car. And then, you know, the life things are hard to do when you first get here. But you do one thing at a time, and slowly you get your life back together, you know. But I'm so thankful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm thankful for good sponsorship. And yeah, I think that's all I got. Did I use up the 10 minutes? All right, cool.